Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts. Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Candyman, a podcast where we're not talking about the movie Candyman, where star Tony Todd got stung by 26 bees. That is not a topic that we're going to be discussing at any point in this podcast. Instead, we're going to be talking about Sweet Tooth, the show on Netflix based on the comic by Jeff Lemire, specifically season 2, episode 1, In Captivity. And later on in the podcast, we're going to be reviewing a piece of candy. I am Alex.
I am Justin, and it is strange that it's 26 bees, because did they count them ahead of time or after? Like, when did they make that?
I got to be honest with you. I want to lay this out before Pete even introduces himself. I fudged this fact a little bit to try to get through it. He was stung 26 times. I assume since it was bees, it was 26 bees, but I guess I don't know. Maybe it was a super bee that stung him twice, and it was only 25 or something.
Oh, maybe bees were hanging out with some wasps.
But we're not talking about this. This is not a podcast about Candyman.
Aren't we?
No.
Season 2, we're retooling the podcast.
Excuse me. I'm Pete, and I just wanted to, why aren't we eating the candy bars first?
Hold on. So to bring everybody back in, we are back for a second season.
Candy bars.
Delicious. On Netflix. I'm so excited to talk about this. On every episode of the show, we do two things. We recap an episode of Sweet Tooth, and then we review a piece of candy. And then
Is it we review a piece of candy and then also we talk about Sweet Tooth?
So this show's been gone for a year, and I think Pete, I think, has refrained from eating candy for the past year. So really pent up desire going on there. What were you going to say, Justin?
This is the podcast Pete's looking forward to the hardest. I have a feeling if we move the candy review to the beginning, Pete would be like, sorry, guys, I got to get out of here. No time to talk Sweet Tooth.
We do a bunch of different podcasts. We always leave a little treat for Pete at the end. A little Pete treat, if you will.
Pete treat.
So the other thing to mention, though, we did this in the first season. It is time for the 2023 Syrup Cup, where we determine the best candy of all time. Very strangely, and we all disagree with this, I'm sure, Snickers won in the first season.
No, I called Snickers from the jump. I was Snickers. I backed Snickers. Snickers was my guy the whole time. I knew
Milky
it. And it
Way won.
The showrunner came through, picked Snickers, and we took it all the way.
Yes, we did interview the showrunner, and he was the person who awarded the Syrup Cup in the first season. I guess we'll see what happens in the second season here, but we are beginning it. This episode, we're going to be talking about Butterfinger Pete at the end of the episode.
Come on, man.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Sweet Tooth. I'm so excited the show is back now. Yes. I'm going to give you a little bit of recap of this episode, and spoiler warning up front. If you haven't seen it, go watch the episode. But brief bit of recap here. We're jumping right into it here. Gus, our little deer boy, has been captured by the Last Men, who are led by General Abbott. He has been locked in a prison. They are being experimented on by Dr. Singh, who feels very bad about it, but is doing it anyway in order to save the life of his wife. They're trying to find a cure for the Big Sick, a sickness that decimated 98% of humanity. Hold on. You did this in the first season, too.
I sure
Just
did.
Let me recap.
This goes with the recapping. It goes with the recapping. Okay, it goes with the recap.
After a year, Pete is now fine with the blinky pinky.
The wiggle pinky. We all have it.
I forgot what that was.
You thought we were just having some fun?
Yeah.
I thought we were just like Beyonce.
Let me finish the recap, and if you have anything to
no,
add
No, no, but
to
that's it. What I'm saying. This is part of the recap. Since you guys are married, real quick, how many adorable children would you murder to keep your wives
this
alive?
This is 100% definitely not part of the recap. That's part of the discussion of the episode, you son of a bitch. So the recap... Just to continue it, Gus meets a ton of other adorable children that he bonds with. They are trying to escape from what is formerly the Essex County Zoo and hopefully get back to their parents. They don't know if Jeopard is alive. They don't know if Mom, a.k.a. Amy, is alive. We don't get to see them in this episode. But by the end of the episode, they get a little bit of hope that potentially Jeopard is alive, the big man. And we also get to see what's going on with Bear, a.k.a. Becky, who teams up with Judy and her flamethrower to take down a bunch of last men, escape from there, as Becky has now, building on the cliffhanger of the last season, connected with Birdie, who is Gus's mother, or rather the doctor who helped create him, at the very
quote
least.
Unquote, mother.
She is in Alaska, I believe we established, and she has discovered a strange ship under the ice that is filled with these purple flowers that keep showing up where the big sick is. So this big mystery is continuing here. But by the end of the episode, all of these elements are in play. The big thing that I want to say before we get to Pete's question, and Pete, I think this is a very good question for you
to ask, but
please, for the love of God, wait until after the recap. How do you feel about the show being back? Because I'll tell you what, it was like putting on a warm blanket again for
me. Oh, wow.
I loved it.
Yeah, this show is great because, you know, we get a lot of post-apocalyptic shows in our lives, especially these days. And this one is, like, nice. Niceness wins in this show. And you feel like the show, the characters are kind, many of them, except for the bad guys. And the show is kind about its characters. And I really appreciate that. It reminds me of a show like Station 11 or another show where it really feels like these people, they're in a bad situation, but they're good and we want to see them being good.
I also miss Fraggle Rock. You know what I mean? It's nice to be around some Muppets a little bit for long periods of time. It feels right.
I'm sorry. Were you saying you miss Bobby?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I miss Bobby. I miss Bobby so much. A little twinge in my heart every time I saw that little guy. And we got so much Bobby this episode. We got so much animal children. Mm-hmm. It really did, like... This is the stupidest way of saying this, but I watch a lot of TV. We all watch a lot of TV. We do a lot of entertainment and experience it. Literal, like, twinge in my heart. Like, I could feel it twisting up at points when I was watching the show. And I do love that it just makes you feel cozy and it makes you feel earnestly for these characters, down to things like, maybe this is the first season. I honestly don't remember because I have not watched it since, but... Things when they're when the animal kids are talking about people, and instead of saying they died or they're dead, they're like, he's not with us anymore. He's gone.
Yeah.
There's a purposeful push, I think, on the part of the writing to make it this safe space for family to watch and interact with the show.
So
but I think it's very rare.
So you're saying you get a cozy feeling when you're watching animal kids be tortured and experimented on.
They're in danger. But, you know, I was actually talking to my kids, who are currently 8 and 13, about the show earlier tonight, because they're like, why are you buying all those Butterfingers, Dad? What's going on? Can we have some?
Wait, all
like,
those Butterfingers? You only needed one. You only needed one.
I had to test a couple to see if I like them.
You can't pre-taste the candy bar. You're worse than Pete. I was going to say, Pete did a good job not interrupting your recap, so he can have a candy bar at the end of the episode. But, Alex, you've clearly already nibbled.
I haven't been niggling. Pete is, if we're listening to the other podcast, currently trying to gnaw through the wrapper. That's not going to
work. Oh, my God.
Like not some sort of hybrid.
Bobby would try to
hybrid
that
child animal.
Please stop. Yeah, exactly. Please stop doing the Bobby voice.
Let me be honest. The Bobby voice creeps me out, too.
We're talking about Bobby creeps
you guys out?
Yes.
No, you do.
Doing the Bobby voice is the creepiest of all.
Well, let me ask you this. I know you get creeped out about my Bobby voice. Do you get creeped out when you find me burrowing under your lawn and then I pop out through that hole?
No. Those are my favorite weekends. I just think Alex is popping by. Yeah, exactly. I just think it's, you know, I mean, I could have done without the skunk fart joke, but other than that, I think everybody's adorable.
I didn't even mind that. I don't know. Oh, I don't like fart humor and I don't like poop humor, but it was so over the top that it worked for me, honestly.
Yeah, they're kids and they're also skunks. So, like, of course it's going to be a stink. Imagine how those kids do not smell.
Go the other way. Go the other way. Be smart.
I remember what I was going to say. And this is something that we talked a lot about in the first season, but in terms of the torturing and getting to see Chameleon Roy, probably dead at this point in that tank. I think.
Frozen that capsule.
The answer to that is yes, by the way.
Sleeping very hard?
Yeah, he's definitely just sleeping.
Yeah, hard sleeping. That's a hard sleeping, bro.
Forever sleep.
Yeah, and that's like why all those people in the napping lawn, which is what other people call a cemetery.
Before we start talking about Butterfingers, is when I was describing to my kids, it's like a fairy tale. It's like a dark fairy tale is what it is. And they do a good job of channeling that, I think.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the animal kids. I wrote down all of their names, but we got Bobby, of course. We got Wendy, a.k.a. Pigtail, shows up again. She and Gus are the two main ones who can talk. Wendy has taught the other kids signs. Some of them talk to varying degrees. Definitely not as much as Gus and definitely not as much as Wendy. We got Jojo Raccoon. We got Haley. We got Junior, Anna and Hannah, Earl, Elephant Earl. Early favorite of the season, I think. The effects on Elephant Earl, phenomenal. I was so impressed by like how tactile they made him look.
Well, and I think like since the kids are going to spend so much time stuck in this room, essentially, I feel like they did a great job of making that very lush and unique and giving it different spaces for them to sort of hide in. And then they did such a good job with the characters themselves, making them look realistic. And I feel like...
Do you know who played Earl?
That was Timothy Chalamet.
No, it was Babar.
Oh,
they got Babar.
Wow. Yeah.
They got
Babar.
That's a huge get.
Yeah.
With the other characters, just to mention their names, Maya, Fun, Otto, Max, Teddy, and Roy, who doesn't make it through this episode.
Yeah, he's takes a big nap. But I mean, an interesting part for me is, or this episode felt like it was about Gus becoming a leader and sort of growing up in a way. Like he takes on their pain. He comes back. When Roy's taken, he's like, yeah, he's fine. Roy's fine. He like tries to keep them safe from that sad fact that we're also protecting Alex.
Let's talk about that moment. I mean, I know you're already talking about it, Justin, but he comes out and Wendy is about to tell them the truth that Roy has died. They've seen his dead body being carted away. And Gus instead has a little light bulb go off over his head and goes, oh no, he's fine. He escaped. Isn't that great? In order to give them hope. Of course, he's lying. What do you think about that? Because I think there's a lot of different things potentially you could take from that in terms of the lessons he's learned from Pumbaa, the lessons he's learned from Jepper, the lessons he's learned from other people. What do you think that means for Gus? Justin, I know you addressed that a little bit already.
Yeah, well, I think it's about him sort of becoming this leader. And by the end of the episode, he's fully like, I've run this room. Like, we're going to get out of here. He has a plan. He's given power by Singh and his, like, birthright being sort of the pre-plague hybrid kid. So I think it's about that. But like a lot of animals get away. Like my family pets when I was growing up, they never died. They all escaped. So like it happens. It's a normal thing.
I'm sorry, wait. All of your animals escaped? None of them died? Yeah.
They would get old and be like 14, 15 years old and then they would escape. Right. I don't know what they were escaping from because they
loved interesting. We had a very different experience in my family where my brother was really obsessed with newts and he had a tank of newts and the newts would escape. And then like 5 years later, we'd find them in the air vents, totally dried out. Terrifying and horrible.
You lived in a hellscape of a home. It sounds like.
Let me throw one in on there. My wife's mom, when they were growing up, had a lot of animals like iguanas. And they would escape, and this is way upstate New York, and they later found all the corpses of the animals, like, in different parts of the house. Like, giant iguana, a snake got out, and so animals are...
That's creepy as fuck.
The thing that I'll say about this, I thought that was a really interesting moment when Gus lied, because most shows...
Yeah, particularly... I'd like to...
Yeah, go ahead, Pete.
Just jump in, because it really felt like Gus, because... She was going to shoot him straight, and he jumped in and kind of was like, I'm going to tell them what they want to hear and try to win them over a little bit. And I just think it was a weird move and very interesting. Just wait a second. Do we trust Gus? Is he have some agenda? Like, what's going on? Like,
well, he's
being political about it, you know?
Well, but let's remember his background. Like, he was not told the truth his whole life.
He was lied to, yeah, yeah.
And I think he's the part of the first season was learning, like, he found some value in that. He felt like it was actually served him because he had, like, a protected childhood and became sort of a person who wasn't terrified all the time. And I think he's applying some of that here. But I also think he's preparing them to rise up and escape themselves. If they're, like, if he's like, nah, Roy, dead. They're going to lose hope and not want to, like, band together and try and do something potentially, which it feels like is what we're leading toward this season.
Well, I think what we're talking about here is if the thrust of this whole show, and this certainly at least is part of what Jeff Lemire is doing in the comic book, is about Gus growing up, he's starting to understand this is why adults lie. This is why adults don't tell the truth about some things. And I think in this case, like you were saying, Justin, he's right to do it here, you know, and he does. Lying is not the right thing, but I think a less complicated show would immediately have Gus suffer in some way for having lied. But here, ultimately, he steers them the right way and he pushes them in the right way. And then ultimately, even though he lied, he finds a better way of working with these animal children by taking the little pen flashlight from Dr. Singh and that beautiful moment where they say, this is a little light of mine, and they have the light going and everything, which is really wonderful. So he finds own way, but I think it's interesting to watch him experimenting with what he has learned from adults as he gets there.
Speaking of sing-songy nice moments, I really like the Golden Girls moment, you know?
I knew you would. I thought of you because you love the Golden Girls. So I knew you were going to be excited about that. What do you think about this new character, this new turtle character, Pete?
Let's just be clear before we move on. Like, Pete loves the Golden Girls. He, like, loves them. He's in love with them. Each of them as separate women.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, seeing that must have been, of course, I thought the same thing.
Yeah, you've been trying, you've been building that time machine so you can travel back to Sicily 1918, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. No question about it.
Wow, that's a deep reference right there, my friend. Perhaps too deep.
But I love that. And I love that joke, too, of having the turtle boy singing, thank you for being a friend, and then immediately following up with Golden Girls, just to drive the joke home. It's in the middle of all this darkness, there's still some very funny stuff going on. And
yeah, the pinky swear is adorable. Mm-hmm.
And Wendy is great in this episode, too. I don't want to downplay her. I thought she did a great job here, sort of being the straight man to Gus and sort of laying out the whole situation. They work really well together. They're very cute together. So fun stuff.
Are you saying you maybe see some sparks flying?
Well, not to get into any spoilers, but that's certainly the direction things start to go in the comic book. And I think they're probably going to go that way, though they're very young at this point. They're both 10, I think. So, he's 10 too young. And she's 8 or 9 or something.
He's very clearly 10. That's a major plot point of the episode.
Let's talk about Singh, because he has a big emotional arc this episode. What do you think about everything going on with him?
It's rough, but I like how they put him in they make his situation like you have sympathy for him. At the same time, he's doing monstrous things, but he's trapped. Like, he loves his wife.
The hard part is, it's hard the way they're leaning into this, where they're like, hey, listen, it's not so black and white here, all right? This is a man who is hanging on to hope of a life with his wife that he probably is not going to get. I mean, let's face it. And it's just heartbreaking. And then he's making, like, horrible decisions of like who lives and who dies here in this, you know, and it's just like now all these people in the cage got to slowly watch everybody disappear and die. I mean, this is a brutal setup.
It is a brutal, but that's why I think it's so nice that when he finally cracks a little bit of the mystery of Gus, he's like, wait a second, we got something going here. He gives him the flashlight, and you see him looking at his wife later on at the end of the episode, thinking about how, oh, God, I'm sure he's just sick to his stomach all the time. Like, if I can just figure this out with my brain, I can save my wife who is dying on the other side of this glass. It's heartbreaking. And so but like I said, they take care of their characters here. So you still feel for him, even though
it's like a Mr. Freeze kind of situation a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah,
no, that's Mr. Freeze.
That is a good call. It definitely feels like a Mr. Freeze thing. I was going to call out that I think there's two things that I was feeling going on with saying. One, on the more realistic end of the spectrum, you've kind of got Nazi scientist where he's like, I feel bad, but Goebbels has commanded me to experiment on you prisoners. That's certainly the darker, more realistic, more harrowing part of it. But on the other end of the spectrum, to go with this fairy tale thing, everybody has their own separate but interconnected fairy tales kind of going on. Like we've talked about the Gus and Animal Children thing, but Sing basically being like the giant or troll who has trapped these children and is like, give me what I want or I'm going to eat you.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, or if you want to talk about like a Beauty and the Beast type thing, you know, like same sort of thing, whatever it is, he's been cursed. He's been cursed and he feels cursed and he has these things going on. And ultimately in those sort of tales, he ends up dying because he's the villain. But I don't know. They work this line very nicely between this is realistic and harrowing if you think about it on that level, but it also works on the level of fairy tale and it also works on the level of just enjoyable TV show.
So in this example, Sing is Beast. And his wife is like Mrs. Potts.
I guess you know, I think about his
you
wife.
You know, Beast
is like,
hooked up with Mrs. Potts.
I was thinking about his wife as like the flower, you know, the rose that's like slowly falling
apart.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
But I like it. I like it. And in this scenario, we're all three dinner plates or something. Right?
No, I think I'm more of a Cogsworth because the gears of my head aren't quite turning properly.
Nice. That tracks. And I'm trying to hook up with a feather duster.
Yeah, that's for right? sure.
Yeah.
You guys, speaking of torture, you don't think it's too torturous to set out a piece of candy you've been waiting a long time to eat and then try to ignore the fact that there is a giant piece of candy in front of you and do a podcast talking about...
Let me throw this out, Pete. Separate? You're saying you're trying to ignore it? I hear you pick it up every 4 minutes. You keep picking it up and like cradling it or that's something.
Do you not have candy other than this podcast for real?
You're a grown-up. You can get candy anytime.
Yeah, but once you start eating candy, it's just really hard to stop. So it's like...
Once you start eating candy. That's right.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about me.
There's a lot more to talk about in this episode, though. We haven't even talked about Birdie necessarily yet. There's some big mythology stuff that's going on with her in Alaska in terms of the ship. She finds this old boat in the ice. There's purple flowers on the boat, including an enormous one, a journal. It says Dr. James Thacker, 1914, I believe. And then at the end, of course, she connects with Bear, a.k.a. Becky, as we see, and it reveals that there's a tape with a message for Gus. This is great. I really feel like they're going for it in a big way, and I'm glad they wouldn't really drag it out too long from that cliffhanger because that was such a huge revelation at the end of the last season.
Well, it's interesting that they literally – we had so many threads. Whoa. We had so many threads. Pete holding up a cassette
shout
tape.
Shout out
weirdly.
Cassette tape. What?
Yeah. Cassette tape. By the way, really quick, I like the joke where Becky didn't know what a cassette tape was, and she pulls out a record, and Judy's like, close. We're getting closer.
The first season was all these different threads that didn't come together and we were just sort of following them slowly and then we saw them get close. And then it's just wild to me that this show did not do any sort of recap and it just dropped us back into the same situation at the same moment. And then he's picking it up again. He's picking it up again. Not time.
I'm sorry, you guys wouldn't notice that. It's crazy. Come on, man. Let me just eat some.
It's crazy to me. I spend all day trying to get my kids and I eat candy and get on a podcast with my friends and have to be like, nope, don't eat that candy. Don't you eat that candy, Pete.
In terms of the recap, you feel like James Brolin, he did a good job. He was doing his like, the last men are the last men and the first men are the first men. But the animal children are children and now last men. Goodbye.
Do you think they should be like, you know what? We should start scripting those narration bits for Brolin because he's just mumbling and he's just talking about he hasn't even read the script.
100% they put a tape recorder next to his bed while he's sleeping. And while he's sleeping, he's just bubbling stuff in his dreams. He's like, the last men Oh, they're coming. They're coming. Yeah.
It's working.
Do my taxes.
I love how you're closing your eyes and really committing to that bit.
That's acting.
I'm channeling James Brolin right now.
Well, I like that James Brolin has really taken over the Sam Elliott role in movies of being like, oh, you want dusty old man on the range? I got it right here all day long. Beef. It's what's for dinner.
One of my favorite revelations when we talked to the showrunner last season is like, he's legitimately committed to doing this stuff, which I think is great. It's very cool.
You love it.
There you go. A couple of other things we should talk about in the episode. Let's talk about the big stuff with Becky that happens at the end, in particular, Pete. What'd you think about the scene? I know you were very suspicious of Judy last season, but she went out, taking out an entire battalion of last men with a freaking flamethrower.
Yeah, it was glorious. It was a really badass kind of moment and a really fun thing for the show. Like, it was, I liked the tension, but also the kind of fun of it. But it was just such a badass moment. And, very rewarding to watch.
I thought, you know, again, like you talk about all the TV you watch, especially like shows where a character is trying to be badass. Mm-hmm. Judy's, that was a badass move. Like the way she just hears the gas tank turns on, you just see the thing light, and then she goes, should have knocked. Blaze, I was like, yo, that's better than Punisher.
What I loved
right
about
there.
That moment is the way that was written. It was like, not only you get this insane action movie line of should have knocked, and then she starts murdering people, and then it's immediately followed up with, get off my property.
That's her and battle then, cry. Just like, oh, so my God.
For the next 10 minutes, you hear her continue to burn them. I was like, how are they? How is she sort of winning here? She's fighting off like 20 dudes. And then Becky gets this intense fight sequence.
Yes, that was the one part that I actually felt like this is going to come out too strong, but almost went like a little too far just in terms of the violence of what's happening. It felt, after we had slow played everything the entire episode, to have her with claws on, you hear as she goes into this guy and kills him. They both fall off. It was a lot.
Yeah, the whole pinky stuff is too much. They go hard on this. They go hard on this show.
I love the pinky stuff. Yeah, it's scary.
Pinky stuff too, right?
It's just a little scary. For those listening, Alex and I are both doing it, and Pete's looking away. He's just trying to look at his little candy bar.
Because he's picturing it in his head, and he loves it.
Nobody better lay a pinky on my butter finky.
We're almost there, Pete. We're almost there. On, first, we should talk about any other moments in the episode that jumped out to you in particular. Anything you want to call out? I'll say I thought it showed a remarkable amount of restraint to not have Jeppard and Amy in this episode. I really like that. Keeping it focused. I presume that they're going to come back. I was really surprised to see Dog come back towards the end. That was great.
I thought that was just a great way to do it. Like, we withhold them, so it gets scarier for Gus, it's scarier for us. It's like, how is he going to get out of here without the big man helping him out? Mom's gone. It's like the parents are away, and these kids have a real adventure and babysitting situation.
Oh, man.
But like, the reveal at the end was great, seeing Dog again. Very curious how Jeopardy got Dog into the food. I guess we'll see.
The kibble. Yeah, by the way, Pete, I forgot to mention to you, we're not trying Butterfinger this episode. We're trying kibble is the
that's
thing. Yeah,
that's not what I'm doing.
This podcast is called The Dog Food Boys. We eat dog food every week.
Nope.
So we got to make a leap. We got to make a leap out of from season two. It's a little more extreme.
This is still bad.
this one's awful. This one's should be for dogs. This should be my animals. Is what I say.
One other thing that we should talk about though before we move to the caddy review is Doug Abbott. We find out
that's what I was
Abbott's first name. We get this whole scene where he wanders off, and we get, again, expanding the mythology of the world, we find out there's this group of three that it seems like Abbott is not part of, the last men are not part of, and they very specifically do not want him to be part of. We meet Dutch in the lowlands, Zhang, who is in Texas, is not coming, and there's the implication of a third person that just want nothing to do with him, even though he is trying very hard to find this cure. I thought this was interesting because this really flipped the power dynamic on Abbott and made him made me almost feel for him in a certain way.
Well, I didn't feel for he's the one character I feel like the show's like, you don't have to feel bad for him. But I also think it helps. He's so unhinged and weird. He's like Christopher Lloyd and Roger Rabbit, where at any moment he's just going to pull his cartoon eyeballs out. And you're like, yo, this guy's wild. So I do think, like, giving the power structure around him, and it makes sense. Like, hey, I don't want to go anywhere near you. You're crazy. Like, it helps the world make sense in letting us have a villain who's so weird.
And he's great. Neil Sandilands, I had forgotten what a silhouette he cuts with, like, that beard and the red glasses and everything. Oh, yeah. He's just a Jeff Lemire drawing come to life on screen, and it's so cool to see. Agreed. So good stuff. Anything else we want to call out about the episode before we move on here?
Pete, you've gone strangely silent as the candy bar comes
in. Butterfinger.
all right, let's do it. We've talked about the episode. Good job, Jim Nichol. I really like this one. Why don't we hold on? Hold on a second. So we're going to talk about Butterfinger here. We're going to unwrap our Butterfingers. We're going to review them. I went to the gas station on the corner because they didn't have any walls on the number.
The gas station saga continues.
This is a artisanal. Vanilla flit. No, I'm kidding. No. They only had regular. I actually tried. I looked for one just for a bit for the show, but they only had regular Butterfinger.
Mine's all banged up. It was in my pocket for a couple
days. Wrapper and all. So
yeah.
So here we go. Wait, do we usually talk about impressions about Butterfinger before we try it? Or
I do a Butterfinger impression where I'm like, I'm nutty and better.
Nobody better finger on my Butterfinger.
Famously, Bart Simpson spokesman. Yep. I don't like. Peanut butter and chocolate really mixed. Ooh. So this has never been my candy bar.
We must have yelled at you for Reese's peanut butter cups then.
I do like Reese's pieces.
Yeah, let's get that crunch, bro. Get that crunch going.
Mm. Oh. I do like these. The flavor's good. Mm-hmm. The thing I don't love about Butterfingers is it tastes like eating sand. It's so dusty.
What are you talking about?
It's I don't know if it's like
sand you like.
So this is one of my favorites. Like. I feel like a Halloween time, if there's a Butterfinger, those are usually going first. Honestly, and it's a weird candy bar because it's so, like you're saying, like it's like these sticks in the middle. It's like eating chocolate covered peanut butter sticks or something.
It's so intense.
I don't know how they do that texture or anything like that.
It's like wet dust.
Yeah, you know what I never noticed before, because I usually only have the fun size, at least this one, it looks like there's a core of peanut butter between the peanut butter sticks or whatever's going on. Do you guys have that as well?
Mine's too, like, bent up and broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like some wet peanut butter, though.
It almost, it's like if they took peanut brittle and were like, hey, this is too hard for normal people to eat.
Didn't you guys?
Because I think peanut brittle is only eaten by people with, like World War II strength. Like the greatest generation of the
elite. You already got out the wooden teeth.
Wait. Did you guys have Chico sticks? Did you eat Chico sticks?
That's like a plant, right? It's like a sweet.
Is that chicken sticks? Chicken covered?
It's chicken bones. You're talking about chicken bones.
Yeah, it's a chicken bone.
It has a crunchy peanut butter in the center, similar to this. That's why I'm talking about it, because it has this layered peanut butter crunchiness to it.
Is that a local Rochester candy bar?
No, it is all over the world.
You dip
bro.
It in some Mac and a little hot sauce.
Don't get me
put
started.
Put a red hot in the middle.
Oh, come on.
Garbage Chico stick.
Wait, back to the Butterfinger, though. Back to the Butterfinger, though. I love just how crunchy, because, you know, normally you get like a soft nougat, and that's a great way to kind of start your day.
Yeah.
But the crunchiness.
You brush your teeth with a candy bar?
Oh, man, come on. The crunchiness is just so delightful. And yeah, I agree with Alex. This is like a must on Halloween. You got to have a Butterfinger on Halloween.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm a Mr. Goodbar Halloween man. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's Snickers. I will say I like this better than I thought I would. How about this, though? I'm not going to eat the rest of that. Mm. I've had half of it, and that's good enough for me. Good enough for Daddy.
It's a lot. It's definitely a lot with the peanut butter and everything. I will say the thing that I always forget about it, or at least doesn't affect you when you have a fun size, because you're like, pop it in your mouth and you're done, and then you move on to another piece of candy or something. this, it definitely sticks in your teeth.
Yeah.
At the end, which I don't love. That's going to be there for a while.
Like peanut brittle.
Like peanut brittle, but it's very tasty. And I know I was joking before about the going to the gas station and getting a variant of it, but Butterfinger is one of those candy bars that's like, nope, that's all we do. We're just Butterfingers. No variation whatsoever.
No mess with it. Well, and like, and this is a good time to talk about like candy bars in general. We don't get a lot of like
still
new.
Silly month.
I know. Like, be yourself, King, Candy Bar King. We don't get a lot of like new ideas for candy bars. Like all these candy bars have been around for like 70 years. Like this started as like some hard like peanut butter rock that then they've like softened and changed a little bit, but it has an old-timey core to it. This
it's 100% definitely somebody's like, oh, yeah, got a snake bite on your leg? Have a Butterfinger. That'll cure that up right quick.
And let me also throw out that the name Butterfinger, the finger, I don't appreciate that. It's like, you want to enjoy this? It's like eating a hand.
It's one of the things that I think works against it, because you don't automatically think of peanut butter when you think of butter. Right at the top, you're like, oh, this is
definitely
like fingers made out of butter. That's pretty gross. And then their whole new ad campaign they do, and where they try to create this character called Robin Fingers who's stealing your Butterfingers. That's not either.
Well, I also think it's strange that so much of Butterfingers' marketing strategy is like there's an underbelly of thievery happening with Butterfinger. Why is there so much?
It does not matter what they call it. This is delicious. This could be called Herpes Burger, and I would still eat it because it is, this is an absolutely delicious piece of candy. Fuck you for smudging its name. This is glorious.
I understand in essence your point, but I'll tell you what. If it was named Herpes Burger, I don't think I'd eat it.
But honestly, that sounds like an old-timey candy bar. Like, oh, you'll love this. It's called a Herpes Burger. It's chocolate and strawberries or something.
Chocolate.
Like, my grandmother made the best Herpes Burger. Like,
back in the 1910s when we didn't know what words meant. Well, anyway, how do we think? I mean, obviously, this is the first volley in the 2023 Syrup Cup, but we feel pretty good about this one so far, I think.
Yes.
Yes, I was pleasantly surprised by this. It made me want to eat a peanut butter cookie.
Mmm.
I can see that. Soft.
Yeah, with like some chocolate chips in it or something like that.
No. See, that's where you're getting crazy.
No, like one big chocolate chip. You know what I mean? Like big ones in the middle.
Oh, and by the way, this is the part of the podcast where Pete has the candy crazies. Like, he's like the cookie crook from Cookie Crisp commercials. His eyes are spinning candy bars.
No, man.
He's very high. He'll say anything. We're going to close this podcast with absolute nonsense every time because Pete loses it.
Oh, man. Well, there we go. We got the first candy. We've got the first episode of Sweet Tooth. Thank you all for tuning in. We're going to be here all season long talking about all the episodes. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to talk to you about Sweet Tooth or candy. Pete would probably prefer to talk about candy, but either way.
Please talk to me about candy.
Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, the Candyman can.
May your week be filled with 26 bees.
I like that it gets stuck in your teeth. You could keep tasting it.
Gross.